This is the Faith Conversations podcast. Here we bring people of faith to the table for honest and authentic conversations about personal faith journeys and what it is like to have a personal relationship with God. Hi, friends. Welcome to the Faith Conversations podcast. This is Jessica Cabrera, your host. And today I am here with Burke Community Church's senior pastor, Marty Baker. I can't wait to talk with him about his faith journey and all that God has done in his personal life along the way. And I always like to think of a way, kind of my first encounter or whatever. And I'm not sure if Pastor Marty knows this or not, but my husband and I were visiting this church. And, you know, whenever you're visiting, you move to a new place, you're trying to find your church home, and you're always just wondering, okay, Lord, is it this place? Is it this other place? Well, we came to BCC and Pastor Marty was teaching that day, and he referenced his family from South Carolina. Well, we had just moved from South Carolina, and my husband and I looked at one another and said, oh my goodness. Then he referenced his life in Southern California and used a little bit of Spanish language at the time. And my husband looked at me and was like, he speaks Spanish. And my husband's from Chile and speaks Spanish. And so just little things, you know. And then I think in his teaching on that day, he talked about God working in his life through a relocation or a move. And God was at that point in time working in our life through a relocation and a move. And these were just little nuanced things in his message that gave us a sense of confirmation from the Lord that we should come back to this church and try it out a second and third time. And then, of course, we ended up becoming members. So very excited to be here. Thank you, Pastor Marty, for being with us.
You're welcome.
I can't wait to hear more about the journey that you've been on. We like to start out really hearing about your background, kind of what life was like before Jesus for you. And then when you came to faith and how you came to faith, and then we can take it from there.
So my life before Jesus. So yeah. I became a believer when I was 9 years old. Became a Christian, I think it was a Sunday, and it was 1967. And it was the day before school started. And my parents were believers. We went to church, lived at church. It was an American Baptist church. Mm-hmm. So I knew the gospel, but I was not saved. And a Gideon gave me a Bible at school because that's when they could pass out Bibles to kids. And in the back of my Bible from the Gideon was a little picture of Jesus standing at the door and knocking of someone's heart. And underneath it was written Revelation 3:20. And I asked my mom, I said, why isn't there a door handle on the outside of this door where Jesus is? And she said, well, he will not barge into your life. There's a handle on the inside. You have to open it by faith, believing he will come in and save you when you realize you need him. So I realized I needed him because I was your James Dobson's strong-willed child. And the family told my parents if something doesn't happen in his life, he's going to be a criminal and thrown in prison for his whole life. Because I like to fight and do all kinds of things. And so I got saved on that Sunday, the day before school started. And I my best friend's dad was our pastor, Dr. Harold Lind. Mm-hmm. And he was also a Navy captain and at a Navy base by our house. And so I made sure I was in the very first pew so I didn't have to walk down a long aisle. Too embarrassing as a 9-year-old. They sang Just As I Am. I was just singing that song 5-6 times, and I finally got out of my seat. And he put his big arms around me and said, welcome to the family of God. And that was a great day. Yeah, it was a great day. So
sounds like it was, yeah. It's somewhat vivid to you still.
Oh, I can see the day. Oh, yeah. There was a deacon in the church at that time. His name was Harley Loop. He owned a concrete company. Huge, huge man. His hands were the size of my head. I mean, he was huge. And he shook my little hand and took me into a side room and took my Bible that my parents had given me. And he took a pencil and he said, I'm going to write in your Bible when this happened, so you'll never forget it. And I still have that Bible. It's in my office in Harley's handwriting. The day I trusted Christ was that day. And oh yeah, I remember everything about that day.
Isn't it incredible? I feel like there's the spiritual realm is just so vivid. And often when we have those encounters that seem maybe like mundane activities, you know, talking to someone at church, going to a closet, picking up a pencil, whatever, but suddenly it's just, it just becomes accentuated, because of the spiritual relevance of that moment. And that's where it started for you. That's amazing. So tell me what kind of how things unfolded for you. You're the age of nine. You realized that you needed to welcome him, open that door and welcome him into your life. And you did. And so tell me kind of how things unfolded for you after that.
Well, I up to that point, I was a D student at school. I was a terrible student. And if you read my report cards, I still have them. The teachers wrote in the postcard, report cards. They said he's a very nice kid, and we just couldn't give him an F, and so they gave me D's. And so,
a pity D.
So I squeaked by because I was a nice kid, and I always struggled with being made fun of by kids that were smarter, and. When my father switched from the Border Patrol to U.S. Customs and we had more money as a family, we moved from the, we lived near a rail yard, we were poor, and we moved to a nicer part of town. And I went to a new school where I didn't know anybody. And this was the year before I got saved in 1966. My teacher, Mrs. Tippett, had me come up in front of the school and spell the word surprise in front of a class as a new student. So I did, and I misspelled it. And so she said, in front, as I was standing there, horrified, she said, well, I just want to let you know you misspelled the word surprise, and it says in your transcripts that you can't spell, so you can sit back down.
Oh, my gosh.
So she mocked me in front of the entire class for being stupid.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely crushed my little spirit.
Right.
And I was like, why can't I spell? And so when I got saved the next year, the day before school, I went into class and I sat in the front row and I prayed. And I said, Lord, since I opened that door handle and asked you to come into my life, it says that you would fellowship with me. And so now that you're with me, I have a request. And my request is that you would give me a new brain, one that can think, one that can spell, and one that, you know, is smarter. And he did. And I became a straight A student, I mean, basically, from that. And it was a divine, miraculous action that I know exactly what happened.
Right.
So all the things that happened after that, the little kid who struggled with school, struggle with grammar, struggle with, you know, then I ended up getting my degrees in Hebrew and Greek, and all those things were from God's good hand. They did not come from me.
Right.
He allowed me to be able to do those things. Like, I was the grader for all the German classes in high school. So I was able to excel only because he allowed me to, because as a child, I asked him to help me. So I have a very, I don't know if you call it a sensitivity to people when they demean other people and put them down, because I understand what that was like. But by the same token, I also see the greatness of God. Then when you ask something in faith, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes he answers those things in profound ways that change your life. So my salvation on Monday morning had great results. When he began to help me.
Right.
And it was transformative. So by the age of 12, I knew what I wanted to do. We had missionaries over one evening for fellowship after church. And when they were leaving, I asked him, I said, if you had to go to seminary, which seminary would you pick? They looked at me like I was some strange
12-year-old.
Martian. And they said, well, the best school for academics, if you want to teach and then maybe preach, that would be Dallas Theological Seminary. So go there. So from the age of 12, I planned on going there. And wow. no one believed me, but yeah. that's what I wanted to do. So I was very, very driven.
Uh-huh.
I felt called.
Right.
I was a baseball player. I was pursuing playing ball all the way up into college. My dad wanted me to try to make pro, but I walked away from playing ball in college because I realized it was either baseball or academics.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt God had called me to study.
Mm.
And baseball would be a big distraction.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to get stuck on a AAA team like some of my friends did. And so I just walked in and told the coach I wasn't going to play. I wasn't going to come out. And I gave myself to, biblical studies. So
so
it's been a very interesting journey. And it started with a little kid.
Right.
Who asked God to help him, in school.
Yeah.
Because I knew I needed help, and I didn't know how to help myself.
Right.
Because
right.
I didn't have the cognitive ability to do it. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I really love to know or understand more about that, especially because I'm listening to you tell this story as someone who listens to you teach also and preach, and so I know what that knowledge has done for you in being able to shepherd the church that you serve with and the way that you're able to teach others the Bible. And so I value that origin story even more. So thank you so much for sharing that. And if anyone listening has never heard Pastor Marty preach before, feel free. I've got it linked in the show notes to be able to go to the online service for Burke Community Church, and you can hear him preach there. But I'm curious about the intersection between your drive and your thirst for knowing God more, knowing his word more, understanding that more, and then your own life, right? The own journey that you were on, the decisions you were having to make, your family dynamics, your relationships, all of those kinds of things. And do you have anything you'd like to share with us just about that experience or that personal kind of faith application journey that you were on in relationship to your thirst and drive for studying the word and defending the word?
So it's hard to quantify.
I know. It was a hard question to ask. So I know it's going to be a hard question to answer.
Very broad question.
Well, you can share whatever you want to share.
So I don't know how to really explain it.
Mm-hmm.
You went from having a kid who's very distracted to a kid who's extremely focused.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a divine thing. I mean, I had an insatiable desire to read the Bible, and I read it all the time. I would wake up my parents like in the night, walk into their bedroom when they were already asleep and wake them up. I mean, I walked in there one night and woke them up, and they're like, what's the problem? And I said, well, I was reading Ezekiel 37 and 38. I was just kind of wondering if you could explain to me the relationship between Meshach and Tubal and how this correlates with the Soviets, and is it a correlation between them prophetically and blah, blah, blah. I was probably 13, 14 years old. So I was always reading.
Right.
I loved eschatology, study of the end times. My pastor that led me to Christ was an expert in prophecy. And I would drag him in my bedroom every time he would come over for dinner and have him explain to me the movement of nations and prophecy based on the globe in my bedroom. And I have that globe now in my study at my house because I learned a lot about prophecy from Dr. Lind. But I always had this great desire to know. So I was always reading and studying. But it wasn't just the scriptures. I loved science.
Right.
All of a sudden, I loved all the disciplines and was very curious about these things. And so, but my mom asked me one time, she said, why do you love the reading and studying the Bible? Because I did it a lot. And I told her, I said, well, Mom, all the answers to life are in this book. And that's what I told her. And that's what I believed. And I still believe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my answers to life, the mysteries of life, the how you handle adversity, all the things that you encounter, there's answers in that book.
Mm.
If you study, God will show you. And so I wanted to know. So I learned apologetics.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what it was at the time.
Right.
But I eventually got my doctorate in apologetics. It just seemed like the logical thing to do. That's what I was doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that drive to know truth,
right,
and how to defend truth, then that became a whole new vista, you know? So I, you know, started reading Francis Schaeffer in the 70s when I was in probably late teens. Started reading Francis Schaeffer to understand how to defend the scriptures from someone that knows how to do it. And so I've always had this great desire to know. Now I look at it and I think the road narrows for me and there's things I won't get to investigate to the detail I want to.
Mm.
So I've got to get with the program.
Mm.
Because there's so much to know, but the Word of God is so deep.
Yeah.
I'm still fascinated by it.
I love that.
I mean, it proves itself.
Right.
It validates itself if you study it.
And I can see that at this early age, he placed in you these skills and abilities. One of my favorite obscure biblical characters is Bezalel from Exodus 31 through 36. And Moses on Mount Sinai and God telling Moses about the building of the tabernacle and how he has called by name Bezalel and he has put the Holy Spirit within him with all skill and ability to carve stones and to cut wood and so forth. And God had cultivated this skill within Bezalel, I'm sure as a young man, and he had become the best of the best in this type of work, not knowing that God was going to call his name from Mount Sinai to say that he was going to be the leader of the builders of the dwelling place of God. And I love that story because we see God's hand in orchestrating things. And so he's clearly gave you this insatiable desire to learn so that you could then share and not only with teaching and preaching, but with writing and be able to get more of who he is and what his word says out to share with others.
It's interesting when you look back at your life as you're older, how God directed things sovereignly. You couldn't see it at the time. It's like the Persian rug and you're seeing all the knots and God's weaving something beautiful you can't see. Now that I'm older, I can look back and I've also told myself and I've told my wife, if I could speak to myself as a young man, in my 20s and early 30s with kids and a wife and stuff, I would tell myself to relax more.
Mm.
Just enjoy the providential guidance of God. Because
His
hand is on you and He's going to guide you. Just enjoy the ride.
Because
it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And so now I can see the things that He's done for that little boy that asked for help.
Right.
And He's like, okay, I'll help you, but you've got to help yourself.
Right.
And are you willing to exercise disciplines to learn how to spell and how to write and how to think and all those things. And then He brought the right people to me to help me.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. I've had great mentors.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Over the years.
I'm wondering, you actually said, as you reflect back and you look over the years, you know, you would tell your younger self to relax more and enjoy the ride. I appreciate that a lot. Is there anything over those years that you'd like to share with us today? Anything as you look back and you think about the journey that God has had you on, not only as a pastor, but as a man, as a husband, as a father, whatever, you know, kind of angle of your life you want to, or whatever hat you wear, that you want to share with us today, just about the way that you've experienced God, His presence, his power, or times maybe that He's been really evident to you in your personal life?
He's done miraculous things that I have to tell my children. I have to tell my grandchildren. I have to tell people, because He does things that are statistically impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And you know for sure that He arranged it.
Right.
And I've had that happen several times in my life. Were times of adversity, times of trial, times where I felt like I was nobody from Nowheresville and was going nowhere, when God's like, oh no, I'm doing something, just relax. And so I've had him do things that are like jaw dropping. I'll give you one instance.
Okay.
So when I was 27, when I left that PhD program at Dallas Seminary, in the Hebrew department, I exited the program. I was already taking classes and stuff, and I exited the program. And my dad came out from San Diego to help me move back to San Diego. And I didn't have a job. I had missed placement from Dallas Seminary because I was on a professor track, not a preacher track. So I went back to San Diego. I had no job. I had a family. I had a little boy, baby boy. And I'm like, what am I going to do with myself? You know, because I was planning on teaching. And so a friend of mine that owned the largest cherry company in the world up in Northern California near Sacramento, her son-in-law oversaw a huge paper plant, like a shipping plant. And she said, if you come up to Northern California, he'll give you a job until you find out what God wants you to do. So I moved, I don't know, that's probably 600 miles.
I was going to say north. California from north to south is pretty.
So I left San Diego, went up there. So for a year, I drove a forklift and I moved 15 to 20,000 pounds manually of paper a day. I realized this was not God's will for my life. It helped me have strong forearms, but I was like, oh my gosh. And the whole time I was there, I felt like God had abandoned me, that my whole life had been given to academics. I had done well, but then he sidelined me and I felt like absolutely abandoned. And why was I in this warehouse driving this forklift, loading trucks? I just felt like it was a complete waste of time, that God had forgotten me. 3 years later, I eventually took a job as a youth pastor at a retirement community in Arizona, which is another funny story.
That's an interesting
thing. I was so desperate. I took the job. That's a funny story, but
oh gosh.
I won't get into that. But
let's just all revel in the humor of that name, I mean, of the youth pastor at the retirement community.
It paid $20,000 a year, and I took that job.
Okay.
I don't know how I survived.
I don't know and how I'm, that job existed.
Yeah. Well, there was people that
for
lived.
For you, apparently.
There was people that lived outside of that little town, Sarita, Arizona, which is south of Tucson, that all the young people had to live outside of the town because the town was 100% retired. So they all had kids. So I was the only youth pastor in the area. So, but I really was in a retirement community. It was hilarious.
Yeah.
But I was there for 3 years. And then one day, the mother church that my wife and I had attended when we first got married, we had moved up to Northern California to Stockton, and the mother church had planted a church in Northern California in Stockton. And they called me and wanted to know if I'd pastor it. Now, bear in mind, 3 years prior, when I was in the doctor program, I was at our mother church in California, and they introduced the pastor of the church plant. And I leaned over and told my wife at a church service in California, I'm glad I'm in the doctoral program. I wouldn't want to be that guy planting that church. 3 years later, I was the pastor of that church plant.
Wow.
God's like, oh, you don't want to do that, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to move you, send you to load paper for a year.
God exited me from the doctoral program. He sent me to this paper mill, blah, blah, blah. So when I wound up being the pastor of this little church plant I had not planned on doing, as it grew, we needed to get out of the school. And so one day I was driving down the main drag where the school was located. And I passed by an abandoned grocery store that was built on the motif of like a Costco, but it went defunct. And there was gates in the parking lot that had it closed. And like 30,000 cars a day went by this place. And so I stopped and pulled up in front of the gates with my car. And I said, you know, Lord, this would be a perfect location for a church. I would like that building. Like, could you like make that happen? So this was 3 years after I worked at the warehouse. Not long thereafter, I got a call from a guy named Don Walters. Don was best friends with my boss from the paper mill. Don was a Christian at one of our other mother churches that helped plant us. He said, hey, I got your name from, my buddy at the paper place. And he said, you're looking for a place for your church, and I'm moving into this defunct grocery store, and I don't need the whole grocery store. And would you want part of it? It was that grocery store.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And we moved in there with Don. He had a carpet store on one side and we had church on the other side. And then over the years, we were there in that building for probably 17, 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, we bought the whole building.
Yeah.
And miraculous things happened even in of that. So
that's neat. Yeah.
So what I thought was a waste of my time
driving
this forklift loading trucks, God's like, no, you need to meet Mr. Cotton. And Mr. Cotton is going to introduce you to Mr. Walters. And Mr. Walters in the future
is going to have a building.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was absolutely dumbfounded at the intricacies of God's providence of how he planned that so that we could move that growing little church into that grocery store and build a church. We were the first church in our denomination, North American Baptist is what we were at the time, to do something like that.
Mm.
And so it was fascinating. We were the only church in town that had a truck bay.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was all based on the providence of God. So as I've looked back over my life, things happening like that, it's like, no, there's always great purpose in these things that God does.
Yes.
And so just trust them.
Yes.
His leadership will be perfect and he will bless you and do great things. That's why I said, I would tell myself to relax if I could speak to myself, because I've seen many, many things like that.
Right.
Statistically impossible.
Mm-hmm.
That I knew they were the hand of God.
Yeah.
And so,
absolutely.
So I thank him for that kind of leadership.
Exactly.
Because all of that eventually, all the things that happened there prepared me for here to move across the country. And even in all of that was part of his providence.
Yes, right. He's the great orchestrator of all things, right?
So I don't question him so much anymore. I have questions, but I don't question him as much anymore, because even in things I don't understand or things that I think are unfair, but he's always just, he's always fair.
Mm-hmm.
And he always wants to do the great things for you, but will you follow him?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, Lord, I will follow you.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've seen you do things that they're humbling.
Yes, they are. But yes, I've had experiences like that in my life as well. And it's so humbling. And you realize just how incredibly mighty he is, how mighty he is in all things.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's done those things. Then I don't want to ever forget these things, because I know he orchestrated all the lives, all the movements of all the people.
Yes. It's phenomenal.
It's absolutely phenomenal.
A part of it is remarkable within itself. So that's a great example. And thank you for sharing that. This has been so interesting to hear more about your journey, where it started, and this insatiable quest that the Lord put you on for the knowledge of him, and then the way that he has miraculously orchestrated things in your life. Even whenever you felt like he wasn't there, he was there working things together for what he was willing to accomplish, and he was going to lead you to that next season in your life. I'm so curious if we can send off with a word of advice. I always like to give our podcast guest an opportunity to give a word of advice to those who might be struggling to believe right now. Do you have anything you would like to share?
So to me, if anybody feels God wooing them and you're inquisitive, the answers indeed to life are in that book.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just look at the 60 exact prophecies of Christ from the Old Testament, it's statistically impossible for one man to fulfill all 60 that he cannot control the variables. You know, so one mathematician has crunched all the numbers, and for Christ to fulfill 9 of the 60 is 10. It's 9 to 10 to the 76th power, which is equivalent to football stadium full of sand and you picking up the same grain of sand 4 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. It would never happen.
Right.
So to me, it's like he was either the Christ or he was not the Christ. But since he existed in time and space, and we have the historical evidence inside and outside the Bible to validate his existence, the scriptures are telling you a story about the Savior who does something mathematically way beyond the stats to show you beyond a shadow of a doubt he was indeed the Messiah who mm-hmm. came from the tribe of Judah, from the line of David, you know, and he fulfilled all the things down to the letter. This was not by accident.
Mm-hmm.
This was by divine planning.
Mm-hmm.
And he's calling you now to believe in him so you can be saved. So the evidence is there. The problem isn't informational, it's volitional.
Mm.
It's your will.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, you know, submit your mind and your will to him, and he will guide you to the truth that saves.
Yeah, make the choice.
Yeah.
Make the choice.
It's the biggest choice you will ever make. Mm-hmm. I did it in 1967. Greatest thing that I ever did,
mm-hmm.
the inner peace that gave me,
mm-hmm.
that I knew I was saved. Never, I don't think I've ever even doubted that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the joy it is to know him, to know that he's with me, going before me. There's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it. Yeah.
You can't describe it.
Mm-hmm.
That it, you know, his hand is on your marriage, on your child rearing, on your relationships. The power that it brings to life. And the wisdom he gives, well, I wouldn't trade that for anything.
Right.
And he does speak. When you read his word, he speaks most clearly. And so I would encourage those who don't know him to ask your questions.
Right.
And he has answers.
Right.
And
well, I hope if you're listening right now, you will take that to heart, particularly if you don't know the Lord. You can ask your questions, you can seek him, but ultimately make the choice. Thank you so much, Pastor Marty, for being here with us today.
You're more than welcome.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's fun
to hear more about your faith journey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Go to the description of today's episode to find more information about what we discussed. If you like this podcast, please click follow, share it with a friend, or leave us a review. And get excited because new episodes release every week.